Hi, this is Jay Washburn.
I'm Joe Bendosky.
And you're listening to Start Writing.
And we are an all-in-one writing podcast. We do episodes on marketing, craft, grammar, vocabulary, and interviews to fill in where our personal experience lacks and to get new perspectives. One that I want to point out was there's a blanket piece of writing advice where they say don't use adverbs, a big proponent of which is Stephen King. But in our interview with Mike Sano, he said, adverbs are a part of speech. If you cut them out completely, you severely limit yourself. And I thought that was a good different perspective on adverbs. So today we have a craft discussion and we're going to be talking about writing groups and voice. Now we did an entire episode on voice and in it we do talk about writing groups a little, but we're going to dig in a little bit deeper here today. But before we start our discussion, we have This Week in Critiques and Writing True. Do you have any critiques?
No.
So I've actually got two for Writing True. I usually only do one, but there's one I really want to bring up. So there's some spoilers here if you haven't seen Thor Ragnarok. So I was watching Thor Ragnarok, and there's this moment where there's this giant wolf walking across this bridge towards a bunch of people as they're trying to get away from it. And flying above it is Bruce Banner. And so he leaps out of the ship. And so as he leaps out, the scene cuts and it shows the people and the wolf coming towards him. And you think he's going to turn into the Hulk, land on the bridge, and take care of the wolf. And what happens is Bruce Banner smashes headfirst into the bridge and knocks himself unconscious. And I thought it was a great twist because you have this moment you've anticipated, right? So we have the suspense of when he leaps out. And then the shot as we're waiting for the Hulk to come down. That's at an anticipated consequence that we talk about. But that's not what we get. What we get is Bruce Banner knocking himself unconscious. And then the wolf just steps over him and keeps going. And so that's that twist. And I thought it was a great little example of what you expect. And then what you get being the twist. It's that change on that.
That's good.
So yeah, I thought it was a good little twist there. Not a major plot twist, but just within the scene, you had this little twist in it. And it was funny too when it happened.
So how do you avoid going over the top with that though? Like, can you do that wrong? Can you do that too much?
Well, I think anything can be done wrong or too much, right? I mean, that's just the nature of
writing. So how do you know how to balance?
I think that's where feedback comes in. Like we're going to be talking about today, the writing group, right? That's mm-hmm. where feedback comes in, saying you've pushed it too far. It doesn't work.
Nobody likes it. Then you know you messed up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So like there's the really famous scene in Indiana Jones where the Mary has been kidnapped and he's chasing after her. And at one point, this guy shows up and he's got this huge sword and he does this big flashy show-off thing and he's ready for a big fight with Indy. And in the script, there's this big fight with Indy. But because Harrison Ford was sick, they needed to cut the scene down. They needed to make up their shooting time. So he said, well, what if I just shoot him? I have a gun as part of my outfit. So that's what they do.
That's great.
It's one of the most famous scenes from all of the Indiana Jones movies. And it's because it was a great twist. Because in all of the other events where Indy encounters someone like that, we have a big fight scene go down. And you expect another big fight scene right here. And it doesn't happen. So I think what happened is then when they're watching the film, they could have, you know, they could have been looking at the edits and said, that didn't work. We need to shoot the fight scene. But because there was a group of people who saw the first round of cuts in the dailies and said, that really works. Let's keep it. Because if it hadn't, they would have just pushed the deadline back, taken the time to shoot it. But as the directors and the producers and everybody watched the daily cuts, they said, it works, we're keeping it.
I like that it's authentic. Like, they were going to have a fight scene just to have a fight scene. and I like that Indy's carrying a gun. Let's use it. Let's do the real thing. And so I really appreciate that aspect of it, too, that it fits with the character even.
It does.
More than maybe a brawl for no good reason.
Yeah. So today we are going to be talking about writing groups. And I wanted to open with this example. And it's one we covered a little bit in our episode on voice, and that is in that episode we talk about the comedian Jerry Seinfeld and how he honed his craft through getting feedback from his audience. They laugh at the joke if they don't. And so I want to imagine you to imagine that you're a comedian and you're meeting with five other comedians, and your whole purpose is to get feedback on whether or not your current material is funny. And if it's not funny, you need to either figure out how to fix it or how to get rid of it. Now, if that's why you're going and meeting up with these people, if that's why you're not spending time writing new material, that's, you know, you've given up that time to meet with these people for the whole purpose of getting feedback, then you do not want the pity laughs. That's a waste of your time. What you want is to know if the material actually works, because if it doesn't work, when you stand in front of the audience, you're going to bomb because they were not honest about what wasn't working with for you. And that's a much harder place to flop. So that is not the only reason people go to writing groups, but that's why I go. I want to know what works and what doesn't, because I don't want the novel to bomb when I release it. I don't want there to be terrible chapters and reasons why people stop reading. And that means facing some hard truths about what I've written.
And now, let me just make a side note. So a comedian will not usually meet with a comedian group. They just go on stage.
Yeah.
And they'll get booed off. Well, I mean, usually a good comedian is going to have a set that he already knows works, and he'll slip in the new material in the middle, and he can see whether in the middle that bombs for a second or not.
Yeah.
And then he can, you know, polish it from there.
Yeah.
But I like the reality of that. And I think there is, you have to be careful that your writing group is not just a group of friends, but an actual audience that's going to have authentic laughter or not.
Right.
Right. So that's another tricky thing you got to watch out
for. Yeah. And so, like I said, we'll talk about a lot of different reasons why people in writing groups. But I think for me, as someone pursuing an author career, I want genuine feedback without the sugarcoating, because I'm planning to make money on this, and it needs to be of a certain quality, and it will only get there through other people's feedback. Now, that can come through my writing group, or that can come from the fact that no one is buying my book. I would prefer to get it from the writing group before I publish. So that's kind of the opening example and how we want people to think about it, because for some reason, when it comes to writing, and I was the same with my first book, we think this thing that we have done for the first time in our life, written a book, is amazing. For some reason, we think that. Now, nothing in my life have I ever done really well the first time. Even learning to walk and eat, all of these things you were not very good at in the beginning, and they took a long time to learn. And this is an incredibly complex skill, and yet for some reason, I do not know a writer who hasn't had this mentality about their first book. They write it and they're like, this is amazing. Be like, it's your first book. Be like, yes. Be like, I don't think it's going to be amazing. You know, now there are exceptions to that. And I think the exceptions are where people go wary, right? Like Patrick Rothfuss's first novel, The Name of the Wind, huge success, fantastic book. He was rewriting that thing for 20 years.
Whoa.
So it's not really his first book.
Yeah.
It is like the 20th time he has written his first book over so that he got it right. So it's really his 20th book.
That's crazy. That's so much time to spend on one project.
Yeah. And so it's important to take that perspective, because when you hear about this, his debut novel, that's not the same as the first book they wrote. You know, these are very different things, because, like I said, authors, for some reason, we think our first book is amazing. And the truth is, it's not.
You talked about the labor that goes into, because it's such a complex skill. And so that's why people feel that way, because they've put so much effort into it.
Yeah.
They've become closer to their characters than any reader is going to be. And so they're seeing a different thing than the actual reader gets.
Yeah. So, and I think you have a point. Like, it is such a complex skill that you spend hours and hours and hours with this manuscript, that you feel like you've put more into this single project than you've put into any other single project, which is part of why you have this misconception that it's going to be amazing, even though it's your very first time.
And also, you've seen it transform from where it used to be, so you know it's a lot better. And that makes you think, that means it's good. But it might not be done.
Yeah. Okay, so in dealing with a writing group, the very first question you want to ask is, what is it you want to do with your writing? Do you want to be a career author? Are you trying to get your writing and your stories to the point that you can sell them and make a living off of them? Or is it more of a side hobby, right? And that's kind of a spectrum as opposed to a yes or no for a lot of people, where they fall on that spectrum at this point. And the hobbyist may not want hard feedback about their story. What they'll want to do more is just talk about the story. They just want to be able to talk about their writing with somebody else. And if you're in a group with people who are hobbyists, they're going to be offended with hard critiques, right? And if you're in a group with hobbyists and you want hard critiques because you're trying to, you know, improve your writing so you can sell it, you're going to be frustrated with those critiques because they're going to be a little fluffy.
Because so when I get friends and family that ask me to critique their papers, like an essay for class or a letter for some application or something, and my first question is always, when is this due? And some of them, it's the next day, which in that case, I know I'm going to fix a couple commas and we're done, right?
It's a proofread,
so,
not a critique.
So, yeah, I need to know how much they're willing to change. And then I also ask them, like, well, what do you think is wrong? And how much are you willing to put into this? Anyway, so, yeah, it's very key that when you're critiquing anybody's writing, you got to figure that out before you begin.
Yeah. All right. So one thing in getting a writing group is you're going to want to look for a group of people who have similar goals with their writing careers, because that is going to have a big impact on how they approach the critiquing process. You know, are these people who want to talk about writing with other people because they enjoy it, or are these people who want hard feedback so that they can address those issues in the narrative? So, and a lot of times what usually happens is you end up in a group, not necessarily, you know, if your first time going to a writing group and you're just starting your author career, it's going to be harder to get into a really serious writing group. Usually writing groups grow up together is what happens. And so you have a group of writers who are writing on the weekends and in the evenings when they get free time, trying to become authors. And if that is their goal, then as their careers mature, they become that full-time writer. They become those full-time writers. But the group kind of becomes closed at that point. Like if Brandon Sanderson, most of his writing group he met in college. All of them were serious. They wanted to develop writing careers. They created a group where they were critiquing each other outside of school. And then as their careers took off, they continued in that group. And so now it is a group of very well-known, famous professional writers. It is an incredibly elite group, and they're not really taking new members at this point. You know, and even in my own writing group, we all started out just nowhere, but now we have people who have publication offers, people who have their agents and whatnot. And so our careers haven't taken off yet, but they are maturing and growing, and our group is far more closed than it used to be. We used to be anyone could, you know, find us and show us. Now you have to know someone in the group to get an invite. But so, you know, not the group may not be the type of writers you want to be in your future, but as long as you have the same trajectory, it's going to, you know, it's something that grows over time as author careers mature. So another factor to look at as you're looking at writing groups, and now depending on where you live, you may or may not have options on different types of groups, is how much experience do you have with craft? Because if you, you know, regardless of what you want your author career to be, if you don't have an in-depth knowledge of craft, it's hard to communicate what's not working. You can tell someone how you feel about a piece of work, be like, it felt dull, it felt boring. But without that in-depth knowledge of the craft, it's harder for you to communicate those things to the author and be able to point out, be like, I started getting bored here. Let me tell you why I think that is. You know, be like, I feel like the action beats of your character kind of dropped off and I couldn't tell what emotions they were feeling about the dialogue they were communicating. We lost the interiority of the protagonist, so I didn't know what his thoughts and feelings were about this situation. And so it stopped feeling like I was in their head and seeing it from their eyes and started to feel like just a black and white movie without any words.
So I just want to mention the converse of that, that if you're... If your readers, I mean, it's possible that you're a little more keen than your writing group. And if they say, I'm bored right here, but they can't tell you why. If you study craft, you'll be able to pick up on what to do when right. someone says, I'm bored here.
Yeah.
And you say why, and they say, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, hopefully you can figure that out the more you study the craft.
Yeah. So those are some factors. So it can be frustrating if people don't have the tools to communicate different things. Or maybe you don't have those tools to communicate, and you can see that that might be a frustration for other members of the group. But again, so, you know, there's a guy in my group who was a creative writing professor for like 15 years. He has an incredibly in-depth understanding of the craft and the tools to communicate about it, because that was his job, was to critique the work of his students for years. So he's thought a lot about it. He knows how to approach it, and he knows how to communicate the problems of the work very effectively. Whereas when we have newer members show up, you know, they don't have a lot. They say, I like it. I didn't like this part. I like this part, you know. So, you know, and that can at times be frustrating, be like, I don't understand why. And so, you know, if I'm going in and tweaking things, I don't know what to mess with as much. But as Jay pointed out, your own understanding. So your own experience of the craft will determine how you're going to fit in with a group, right? If you have a very in-depth understanding and you're with a group that doesn't, it can be frustrating for you. Or if you don't have a lot and you're with a lot of writers who do, it could be frustrating for them. And so again, that's something you can learn as you go. But it is something to consider in what people you're going to work with.
Man, and if you are the underdog, it's good to be humble enough to ask questions and learn. I feel like Joe knows a ton of stuff, like a lot of terminology that I don't. So I've come a long way through our discussions. And anyway, so if you're the underdog, you can catch up.
Then another factor to look at is what genres do you read and write in? Because there's a lot of nuances to various genres that aren't in other ones. So if you are writing and reading science fiction and fantasy, and someone in your group brings a romance, you may be bored with the romance plotline. Not because it's boring, but because the genre in itself has never appealed to you. You know, you're not going to be able to really address that part of the plotline. I've mentioned this before many times, but I did have a critique partner, and I write historical fiction. People who read historical fiction like facts and details. They want history. That's why they're reading it. And every time I would point these out and have descriptions or different things, he would tell me to cut them because it wasn't a genre he read and he didn't care for it. And I would ignore those comments all the time. But, you know, that was a factor. Now, one of the reasons I had him as a critique partner is he had great comments about character and about the dramatic narrative that were great, and which is why I kept, you know, we kept exchanging work, is because there were definitely elements of his critiquing that were fantastic. But when it came to that portion of my genre, he couldn't critique it effectively because he didn't read it, he wasn't familiar with it, and there were reasons for that. Hmm. You know, he didn't like those fact things. Those facts and historical descriptions and whatnot that go along with historical fiction, which is why he didn't read it. And so when he saw it in mine, he told me to get rid of it. So yeah, definitely a factor. Now, having writers from multiple genres can also offer some opportunities. In my writing group, we have a romance writer. And so if you have any kind of romance subplot or anything, she's a fantastic resource. She reads a ton of romance. She writes romance. And so she can point out if even in your little romance subplot, what's working and what's not, because she's so familiar with that narrative style. Right. And we are working on an episode that will talk about emotional genres, what emotional experiences people look for in specific genres. And I'm not going to go in too depth here, but writers from different genres can bring in a perspective to introduce that emotion into your genre, which can be a powerful tool, right? So we'll talk about fantasy briefly. Like the emotional, one of the big emotional draws of fantasy is the feeling of wonderment, right? That is the emotion fantasy readers enjoy having, and they get it from fantasy. Now, if you want that emotion in a different book, they're a good resource, being like, how do you get your audience to feel this way? And they know that, which is, you know, as I mentioned, our romance writer, you want people to feel the attraction between these two characters. She knows how to get you there. She's fantastic. So like I said, there's ups and downs to having writers from different genres in your group. And one thing, usually you're going to have writers from different genres in a group. It just happens. And so you need to find what advice to take and not take based on what they're writing and what their experience is in and what they read.
Well, and I think that brings up a good point that as the author, you have the power of veto, right? But you need to wield that power very humbly. Like, you need to, in fact, is what did Tim Ferriss say? Something like, what was the quote? Anyway, you can't always trust everything you think. I think that was the quote. And you got to be willing to put your own opinions aside and not just veto everything that's critical. Mm. But it's okay to veto things.
Yeah.
Just judiciously.
Yeah. So I brought this up before, but a lot of times in my group, particularly my live group, the critiques I'm looking for are the ones when I hear it, I say, yes, that is exactly what this chapter needs or this storyline needs, right? That is what I'm usually looking for in a critique group. But occasionally, a critique will come up that I disagree with, but multiple members will mention it, and then I'll take a poll at the end and be like, who agrees with this critique? And if I get a majority, then clearly I'm in the wrong on that one, right? Mm. It's clear that most readers are having this experience to the work. Right, regardless of whether I think that critique should be thrown out or not. So, that happened with one of my darlings. I'd written this line called "Can't is not a statement of desire." I thought it was this great little line about how the character was refusing to do something, but he kept saying "can't" as opposed to "won't." Right, so there was something holding him back, and so I thought I'd encompassed it really concisely in this line. And everyone in the group was against it. You're like, no, it's confusing. Really? I don't know what you mean. And the whole group was in consensus on this. And because like when the first person said it, I was like, I'm keeping that. I love that line. I think it's great. But when like 4 out of 5 had mentioned it, I was like, okay, so maybe it does need to go. But yeah, so yeah. That was an experience.
It's a sad story.
Getting consensus. Yeah, so I had to kill one of my darlings that way.
But yeah, that's a pretty cool that you have a live poll. That you can have these live polls. That's a really, that's a powerful thing.
Yeah. So in a group, and this is more a concept if you're putting a group together, and that is group function and different ways that they can work. And so sometimes groups, the writer reads their own manuscript while the group makes critiques and then they discuss it at the end. So sometimes you'll take turns. Other times it'll just be an open discussion, depending on how the group is being run. I've been in groups where everyone just, the author hands out the manuscript and then everybody reads it and then we discuss it when everybody's done.
I've been in groups where you read it before.
Before you show up and then it's just a discussion.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I don't think I've ever had a group that does that. So at least not a live group. Online groups are all that way. But yes, some groups will pass out assignments. So you can make a specific, they'd make a specific quest, be like, Don, I want you to really focus on character. Matt, I want you to look at the dramatic narrative. Some groups don't, just depending. So online groups, live groups are a little bit, for some reason, they're a little bit harder to control that way. Whereas like online groups, it seems, is a little bit easier. So, and with an online group, particularly if you're using these big websites, you can kind of build your own group. So what you usually do is you just start out in the big pool. Just, you put your work out there for everybody to see, and whoever picks it up and reads it because it fits their genre will check it out, and you'll get feedback from them, and you'll get feedback for people, and eventually start to narrow in on the people whose critiques you really like, and they like yours, and they're open to just a straight up exchange.
Wait, so I want to hear your personal group situation now. Like, you meet once a week with a live group.
Twice a month with a live group, and then I have 5 or 6 online exchange people that I've built together. So that's not like...
Wait, and those are just one-on-ones?
It's kind of a one-on-one, so it's not like we ever, the online group, we never meet up with all six of us and just talk about the work together. Mm-hmm. But I will critique their work, they critique mine, which is usually how online goes if you're using one of these big sites. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a regular schedule for those, or what's the commitment there?
So what it is this is pretty common with your big online critiquing groups, sites, is that they have kind of a queue or a karma system that you have to do so many critiques to have enough points to post a work for critique, which is how they maintain the cycle going forward. Yeah, so that's kind of how it is. So with that group, people just post as they have the points to do posting, but they earn those points by critiquing other people's work. Right. And so ideally you want to be critiquing somebody's work you enjoy reading and whose critiques you enjoy. You're looking for that duality there. Someone whose work you enjoy and who you value their feedback, because your work will only get so many critiques before it will come down. Be like, you've gotten enough critiques, we're bringing you down so that other people can get critiques as well. Right. So usually you try to narrow in on the people you really enjoy working with, and then that kind of, you form your own little subgroups that way. So I've heard of groups where they do like a video chat live discussion, but I've never been in one of those myself.
Yeah. Yeah, the internet's got a lot of cool tools to help with this.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you don't have a group, so there's several organizations, and in the newsletter we'll put links to lists for these. Like there's the Romance Writers of America. It's a national group, and then they'll have state chapters, depending on the size of the city, or that may be in a nearby city, or there may be several in a city. Like in New York, there's tons of chapters guaranteed, right? Whereas here, I think there's just one chapter in the city we live in. So there's several national groups that then have smaller chapters that organize these critique groups. My experience with these big ones is you're usually going to have a lot of beginner writers. Like I said, usually what happens is once a group really works together for a long time, their writing and their careers mature, they kind of close off. Like, we used to be part of a big thing, but now we've broken off. We're our own group. We handpicked the people we wanted. These were people who attended regularly. These were people whose writing we enjoyed and who gave good feedback. And we kind of pulled them to create our group. We were spending so much time critiquing work about authors who were just hobbyists. And so, they had that approach to it. So we wanted a little bit harder, more serious group of writers. And that's what we got. So if you're looking for a group, you can look up these big chapters and find them that way. If you're attending conferences or writing retreats, you can meet people there if you're looking to organize a group. You can meet them in person, and through, whether it's a conference or a retreat, you'll have some exposure to their work. I know, again, ideally, you're just going to want people whose writing you enjoy reading, because it makes attending group all the more enjoyable. There are Facebook groups that I know organize. These are online as well. And then we'll list some of the big sites like Scribophile and the others that are these online ones that do this kind of karma or queue. You do critiques and then you earn the right to be critiqued kind of thing. Mm. So we'll put links in the newsletter to all of that as well. Or if you look up this article on the site, we'll have a bunch of stuff listed and links you can go to check that out if you're looking for a writing group wherever you're located. A big organization is meetup.com. That's actually how I found my group initially. And then, we kind of splintered off doing our own thing. the advantage of the live group is the ability to really discuss something live. There was one guy who brought a blurb for his book for critique and feedback. And he read it, and we started going around the room critiquing it. And about halfway through, Sandra made a comment. And the comment completely changed the way all of us wanted to rewrite this blurb. And so we went back around the room again because it was such a good idea and such a dramatic change. And so that's something you really only get with live, whether you're doing online live or in-person live, is that kind of in-depth discussion. Because like with my exchange partners online, you know, there's not, you know, there's not five people in a conversation, and it, and the whole conversation can't be shifted by the comments of some person, right? It's just that one-on-one. So that's one of the advantages to the live group is that kind of discussion, particularly if you're encountering a problem.
Yeah, man, and I just love follow-up and clarifying questions.
Yeah.
I just think it's so valuable.
So other factors to consider is the writing pace, and how often and how long and where the meetups are going to be. So the writing pace, how often does this group meet and how much material are they going through? If they're meeting more often than you're writing, it can kind of feel exhausting trying to keep up and always have something ready. And if they're not meeting enough, then it can be frustrating because you don't feel like you're going to get through enough material before your publication deadline. Initially, that's kind of how I was feeling about my live group, and that's why I developed my online group.
Oh, cool.
And so now I only take my really trouble issues to the live group. Instead of going chapter by chapter, I just take, you know, whatever section I think really needs help to the live group. And then the online group, I'm able to move through chapter by chapter because I can move through material much faster.
So what if you need global help? This is a big deal for me, but like if you bring a chapter. Okay.
This is what you're talking about, beta readers. Yeah. So there are beta readers exchanges, and you know, with live groups, people can agree to a beta read exchange. But I think the trend, and usually this is what it is what you find your super fans, and those become your beta readers. You know, that's usually it, and because that's a bigger group to build. You know, it's you know, it's just a lot easier to get your fans to do the beta read for you because they get the book for free, they get to have their comments mentioned, they get their name mentioned in the book as contributing to the work.
That's a pretty good perk.
Yeah, and so for really big fans of your work, I think that's where it's going. Now, if you've never published anything, you're not going to have those beta readers. And so you can go to beta reader exchanges online. You can talk to members of your group to make those beta readers exchange. And with my online group with Scribifile, I can almost do an entire manuscript of back and forths if you know, if I'm really staying on top of it.
Hmm. Cool.
So what to bring, like I said, it kind of depends on the group, you know, how much time you get to read. Like in my live group, I tell people if they're coming new for the first time, 5 pages, double-spaced, 12 font, Times Roman.
And bring 10 copies?
And then on our Facebook group, we say, this is our head count, bring a copy for each person. So I don't give people an exact word count. A word count would be better, but my experience is I can usually get through about 5 pages of that kind of font and stuff. If you have a lot of dialogue, you'll be getting through more. And if not...
Did you guys set a timer in your group?
Yeah, and the timer's based on how many readers we have. So just how many people show up that night and are going to be reading from a manuscript.
And you do like a 3-hour block, is that right?
Yeah, it's a 3-hour block that we meet for.
Cool.
So yeah, so it's all going to depend on the group, you know, what you're going to bring and how much of it and how often. So and again, you're looking for a group that's going to meet your writing needs, you know. And like I said, with me, I had to develop 2 groups. I liked the discussion and the feedback of the live group a lot. It was very helpful, but it wasn't fast enough. And so that's why I developed my online group. So I guess in closing, these are notes from Pixar. About how they do their feedback about the story and everything as they're workshopping. And they say, this is what we want something to include. What is wrong? What is missing? What isn't clear? What doesn't make sense?
Oh, this is good.
Say, a good note is specific. A good note does not make demands. Most of all, a good note inspires. So that's their little method and their quote there about when they go into their critique.
And a note meaning like when you write a note on someone's
draft. No, that's a critique. We would call it a critique. So that's screenwriter terminology.
Yeah. But a good note, so a good critique doesn't make demands, right?
Right.
It inspires.
It inspires.
So is that saying be positive or
I think
what is that?
Right. So And I don't even, I guess for myself, I don't even agree with that statement. I was just reading their quote, right? I don't agree with it entirely.
Because I actually like
because
it.
Because I, you know, because you could say, this isn't working for me. Now, maybe I have the language to explain that or not. If I have the language to explain that, then I can, you know, convert that into inspiring. Like, this isn't working for me. Be like, I feel like if you cut the chapter half a paragraph before, it's a much stronger cliffhanger. Read it with me. And see what you think, right? But if I don't have the language and the craft knowledge to say that, then I still need to say, it feels like it fizzles at the end here, right? I still need to say that. I can't convert that to an inspiring point because I don't have enough craft knowledge. Whereas if I do, I can say, look what happens if we cut off these last two sentences. See how much stronger that cliffhanger is, and we still have all the same information.
Well, so what you're saying is you can give a decent critique or you can give a good critique. So Pixar is talking about the good critique, which is if you have the insight to see where the gem is and what you got to chip around, chip away to get to it.
To get to it, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. Good old Pixar. I love Pixar. I think they've got some great film.
They do. They have some great stories. So, all right. As always, we would love it if you would leave us a review. Tell your writer friends about us. Link to one of your favorite episodes or our blog. We're trying to expand... I guess it's not even a blog. I'm now just putting up articles independent because I just didn't like the blog format. But yeah, so we're trying to get more of those up. If you enjoy the show, check out one of our books. And if you email us, we'll be happy to get you a free copy in exchange for a review. We always love more reviews on our books. And mine's in audio as well as text, so if you want to check out that. Get the keywords. So we're moving into week 4 of the updates for the keywords. So you can get those. The very first set is free. There's over 20,000 there, but all the updates are only available if you're on the email list. So you can use that password to access the keywords there. If you're having trouble with your blurb, send it to us. We'll take a look at it. And then write in any suggestions, comments, or topics you'd like to see us cover in the future. And thanks for listening.
Time to start writing.